So let me get started before I run. Okay, I'm watching the time. So this is something as a character of mine I'm still working on. Pastor Dan, please pray for me as an entry-level minister. This is something that I'm catching myself. It's that I get annoyed easy. Peter could have just told you that. And you can see that, and sometimes it just, especially when I'm tired, I get annoyed pretty quick. And when recently there was a situation where I am kind of just, I feel tired and then I just want to talk about anything but. But this is something, whenever this happens, something will come up and give me a trigger. And then usually what I am annoyed with the most is non-Christian friends that likes to quote the Bible. Especially, I don't know, is because I am here or it's just they happen to do that. So there was this one occasion, this guy, there's a couple of friends was talking to this guy. There's something going on in his life. There is some moral issue that he's going on. I'm not even talking about Christian value, just regular moral issue that he needs to work on. And then I don't know what comes over him. Suddenly he busts this out. He's like, hey man, don't judge, love your enemy. And it sounded good. And everyone was kind of stopped. And then because by profession, guess what? They look at me. It's like I have to come up with some rebuttal. I think it's some of the most abuse passages is either the Sermon on the Mount. It's some of Jesus' famous saying. So what is it Jesus saying? It does. Love, it does say, love your enemy. Don't judge. But now is today, people use it in the context. It's like, just leave me alone. Let me do whatever it is I'm doing. And then just leave me alone. Don't tell me. Is that what it really means? Can that be? Is it just to make us? Does Jesus really just want to teach us and then train us to be a more tolerant person? And why does he say that? So of course, context matters. We have to look at where is it coming from. And today's message is going to be on Luke 6. If you have your Bible or your app, turn to Luke 6. Luke 6 in here, it's called Sermon on the Plain. And in Matthew, it's called Sermon on the Mount. It is somewhat the most important saying. If you have to sum up, if you have to be the first person to read Jesus' saying, to know, to encapsulate what he wants in his kingdom, it is between these two sermons. They are complementary. They're essentially saying the same thing, but I'm looking at the Luke tick of it. Now, ever since a couple of weeks ago, Pastor Sam wrote on this board over here that we need to look at things not out of context, but in context. So let me just do a little reminder. Luke coming up to here at this point, especially between chapter 3 to 9, is summarizing a theme. It's called the inaugurations of Jesus' kingdom. Inauguration is not a commonly used word. Usually when we look at inauguration, is every 4 years when we sworn in a new president. Is that right? Inauguration. It is to proclaim. But in this process of, like, let's just look at the inauguration of the presidents. First thing, there is a ceremony. There is witness. And then he's there to give a speech as if he's telling his people what he's about to do in the next 4 years to come. So likewise, in chapter 3, John the Baptist is preparing him, is ushering him to the office. And then in his baptism, like in his ceremony, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, the Trinity, the Holy Trinity, all present, as to ensure that his place as the king, it is true. And then once you come to chapter 6, he's declaring that he is, I am the Son of Man, the Lord of Sabbath. I am who I said I am. In the beginning of chapter 6, like a president, he's calling out his 12 disciples. And this is his cabinet. Is that right? The president called into his cabinet of his office, right? These are the people who's close to him, who's executing his will. And then here, in chapter 6, Jesus does something else more. Because this kingdom, as of this point, is rather empty. And he's calling out to people to come to his kingdom. At the beginning of verse 27, it said, but I tell you who hears me. But I tell you who hears me. Now, the word hears, so I want you to pay attention to it. I have a child. I'm learning that, you know, a lot of parents share with me when eventually when you communicate with your child, it's like, I hear you. Cantonese is like, well, tang dou le. I think sometimes to the child's perspective is, yes, the voice coming out of your mouth, these noise, I receive it. But the meaning, I might not catch it. But in Bible said that when you hear, for those who hear me, in Old Testament is the word shemot. It's that not only I hear it, but I process it and I receive it. So these are the people who will become Jesus' citizens. And right off the bat, he kind of tell you exactly what to expect that is in this faith like. What is it that is in his kingdom is like? Especially in Luke, he talk about this value is rather weird. In Bible geek term, we call Luke is always talking about an upside down kingdom. It says right off the bat earlier, it's like, blessed are those who are poor. Blessed are you who are hungry. Blessed are you when men hate you. It is upside down. It's woe to you who are rich. Woe to you who are well fed. Woe to you who laugh now. It means that kingdom value is a little bit different. Also, this kingdom that Jesus is establishing is a brand new humanity. This is what is expected to be humanity, the new humans of God. So I'm coming to this part of the message that I want to tell you that I don't think this is what Jesus is saying. Don't judge me. Leave me alone. If you're mad at me, just love me anyway. It's not what he was talking about. It gave a little bit more context in the Matthew versions of it, because right above, right when you get to here, and to love your enemy part, and Matthew is actually even give you a little more context to say that this don't do eye for an eye. It's give up revenge. In this kingdom is so upside down that we learn to love our enemy. And this is some passage, this passage is challenging to me because it's important. Because in here, in a minute, I'm gonna read to you and stuff like that. What if people slap you? What if people take your coat? You know about this. What should we do with it? So today I'm going to talk to you about three things. The enemy, love, and why. And first let me read to you Luke 6, verse 27 to 36. But I tell you who hears me, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone strike you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone take your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do not do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those whom you're expecting repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinner lends to sinner expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemy, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting it getting anything back. Turn your rewards, then your reward will be great, and you will be the Son of Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. This is the Lord's word. So in this, to talk about the three concepts, enemy, love, why. First, let's talk about enemy. In the context, in verse 27, it said that these people are the people who hate you, people who curses you. But if we look into more of the terms enemy, it's actually those people who have hostile intention to you. Their desire is to injure you. Especially those who create in a manner that is doing something that is not truthful, to commit into falsehood, into bringing accusations to you. Now, that's pretty normal. If people hate you, they're going to slander you, right? Are these your normal enemy? But if we're looking into the context that Jesus is calling these people into his kingdom, that means these people are hating you because you are committed into doing Jesus-lee stuff, meaning that you're living the life of gospel, meaning that you're ticking on Jesus' value, his upside-down kingdom value. So now this is not people who hate you because you're doing something hateful. Now I'll give you an example. I don't want to be gross. What if you're like reading the Bible one day in Starbucks and decide to pick your nose, but do something gross? And people are hating you now because, wow, he's persecuting me. You know what? I hate to do this, but I'm going to use my friend Jack. And that's not his real name. For a while, he's always just coming. He's like, oh, I'm being persecuted. And we felt bad for him. We were praying for him and then just counseling him. And then one day we're talking to one of his coworkers who's also from the same fellowship. It's like, no, he's not being persecuted. He's just doing dumb things. Like he will park not in two parking slots. He would take over, like take a slot and then he'd take another quarter over. He would do stuff like that. His project is not done and he's out there talking about Jesus. So people are actually not hating Jesus. They're hating Jack. I'm talking about you're not because you're doing bad that people are annoyed at you or hating you, but it is that the fact that you're living in the value of Jesus. You're committing in a manner of truth. You're not persecuting people. You don't seek revenge. People hating on you because you believe in Jesus and you're living out that. So that's what it is. So this is what an enemy is, and I'll just talk about why you have these enemies and what are you going to do with them. This is the passage where sometimes it's just difficult to digest. It is in verse 29. It said that if someone strike you on one cheek, turn to your mother. If someone take your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Are you going to be walking around being a slap dummy? Being a punching bag? Is that what it means? What do you guys think? Have you guys been slapped before? Now I'll come up with this rule in explaining it. I'm going to call it the 9-10 rule. I come up with it and I'm hopefully get the copyright from it. Because 90% of it, we're going to have to look at in the language and how the language is displayed. And the 10%, we're going to look at it in the literal sense. If we're looking at it like what Pastor Sam wrote on the boards and stuff like that, we have to look at how that, because Luke is very fancy in Greek. He used a very artistic way to write. Luke is a very good writer. But up to here, what I believe is Luke is using this thing called hyperbolic language, meaning a figurative of speech. If you know, let me give you one. Your breath smells like death. You know what death smells like? I need to pee so bad I'm going to explode. He ran like the wind. What else? You smell like skunk. You know, that type of thing. It's using something to describe into it. Hyperbolic. It's also in the language it said that because it was slapped and then there's a progressions into it. You slap, turn the other cheek, they take your cloak, give your tunic. But what it does mean is people is going to take absurd advantages of you. They're going to dig deep. In historical context, they even say that this is some part, if you look at verse 22, this is exactly what's happened to them in real life. People will hate you. In some cases that when people exile you from synagogue, you know what? They slap you. They backhand you. Hey, imagine that if you do a church transfer and we have to properly exit you and just slap you. No, but in here it says that because these people were in the synagogue, because of Jesus, they were getting kicked out of synagogue. They've been in disgrace. They're taking their tunic, they're shaming them. They're devaluing them, their social status. They're putting them down. This is an absurd thing that they will do to you. People will persecute you in the name of Jesus. And then there's something I want to talk about over here. Because sometimes when people don't look at the Bible in context, they take this passage in some sort of like Christian pacifism. And then they even say that you cannot self-defense. I don't believe this is what it was talking about. Does that mean that Christians condone abuse? A lot of people, domestic abuse? Are we okay with that? No, we're not okay with that. This is persecution because you're living for Jesus' sake. Now, I'll give you an example. In Acts 16, when people are beating onto Paul's and stuff like that, they call the cops. They call the magistrate. And then in chapter 17 and stuff like that, this is the same story that people are trying to ambush Paul. And then you know what they do? They were wise as serpent. They evade them. So I believe this is a separate issue. This is a total separate issue. But I don't try to, I don't think I can offer you a comprehensive list. 2 days ago when I was reading in Virginia Beach, there's another shooting. I don't know what that would take. I don't think this is a persecution. I think this is just hate. Or what about robbery? In the middle of the night, someone kicked your door down. Are you going to defend yourself? I don't think this is the passage telling you that you do not defend yourself. As we have a lot of girls over here, I have a 3-year-old. If some guys comes in and do weird stuff to you, are you going to let them take advantage of you? I say, no, this is not what this passage is talking about. So be very distinctive. And I might not be able to give you the comprehensive list, but you have to be understanding what you will be getting persecuted for doing Jesus-ly stuff, and then what people just exercising hate on you. You have to be very clear on that. So that's the 90%. From the language, it tells me it's hyperbolic, it's figurative of speech. You will be persecuted, you'll be shamed, and you will be treated badly. But then there's the 10%. In Acts 16, Paul and Silas was beaten until their clothes fall off. They tore his cloak and then they beat them. Physically beat them. And then there is also Stephen in Acts 7 that they were brought him to the court. They accuse him in front of everyone and then they stone him. So there is 10% of chance that you will be martyred because of Jesus. And sometimes we don't talk about that much. There is martyring going on around the world. What was it recently? Was it in Indonesia during Easter? The terrorists shoot up churches? They do that almost like waiting for Easter. So there is chances because of the name of Jesus you'll be persecuted. And then sometimes it is both. 90% they will shame you first and then they will act something much more evil. What I'm trying to say is Jesus tell you right there, following him, it will be difficult. It will summarize it literally in verse 22. Blessed are those who are, blessed are you when you men hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject you, reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Because of Jesus, you will be persecuted. Now let's look at this. You will be persecuted. People will hate you. But I want to shed some light onto this. And how is God using this opportunity, A, into refining you, B, is to giving himself glory. How is that? If we can take a look in verse 32, it said that you have to love your enemy. There's no way out of it. You can't downplay that. But let's talk about love. English, Chinese language, when we say love, is a very vague word. It's very vague. Apparently there is depth to love. I love taco. I love my daughter. I love the Warriors. Or I love the Niners. People ask, how much do you love? So there is a sense of love. I love your jacket. Right? I love your hair. I love the new glasses. Oh, I love your iPad. Right? But in Greek, love is very, very distinct. They talk about it. They have different word for it. The first one is called stoge. Stoge is a parental love. Mother, father loving the child. Stoge. I love my cousin. Stoge. Eros. It's erotic love. That's what they talk about. It's a physical sense of love. It's something in there chemically driven you to love it. Maybe seeing Gucci shoes. Your favorite Korean pop star. It's physical love. Someone who is attractive. Philia. Brotherly love. I love it when I was trying to study it. It's what is philia? How does it describe brotherly love in Cantonese? I would call it 朋友之情 or 義氣. That's what it really says. And then the last one, it's agape. We hear this Christian term all the time. It's agape, agape love. What does that mean? And some of you being in church long enough, you know that this is sacrificial love. But as weird as things is sacrificial love, not based on the merit of the person. It's not based on his or her value. but it's based on the grace giver. It's based on what the grace giver see in that person. Therefore, he or she sacrificed for them. Sacrificial love, not because of your merit. I simply call it, this is grace love. This is grace love. Now, how is God use love in these situations and to building you up and you're already being hated? And the first one I can think of, how love is under persecution and how love protects you. You're being already being yelled at. I'm already being defamed. I'm already being disgraced. How are you protecting me? But if you are thinking about it in God's perspective, what's most important between God and you? Sometimes it's not how you feel or your reputations. If you think about it in God's lens, most important thing God think about, it's your relationship with him. And that's why he has to have you to love. He's protecting your relationship with him. You ever heard of a term, it say, you become who you hate? You see, thank you, brother. You see a lot of children who grew up with abusive parent, they become abusive. If you hang out with hater long enough, you deal with hater long enough, what's one thing they do? They infect you with hate. See, this is how I explain it to myself, and you see if this makes sense to you, and we can talk about it. I say, hate is a carrier. Sin is the sickness. If like flu is a virus, but it needs a carrier, right? Air carrier, spit, human contact, drinking from the same cup. It needs a carrier to get to you. And this is what does. Hate, malice. When you're being persecuted, you're being angry. Sometimes you want to pay them back. That's why Jesus said, don't retaliate. Don't revenge. Because if you're hating, you're contemplating, you're calculating how you're going to get back. You're hurting me today, I'm going to come up with a plan to hurt you back tomorrow. You're building up hate. And that hate, it's a carrier to bring greater sins in. In Ephesians 4, it said that in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. Don't let it ruin your body. It'll turn into something. And then do not give the devil a foothold. Do not give him enough built up in there to cook up a batch of sin in you. You will become the people who you hate. Genesis 4 said that sin, we always think sin is I done something bad, that's sin. But I believe sin is something more alive. It calls you. It entices you into it. If sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. So the first thing God does, he's even you're angry. He does not want sin to come out in you. Because one thing is when people are persecuting, they're hating on you. They are sinning themselves. And what really they need is you to sin along with them. Second thing is you have to trust God. And justice is bigger. Justice is a long-suffering thing. If you look at the fruit of spirit, one thing I lack the most is actually long-suffering. I like revenge. You come and hurt me, I hurt you back. You ever heard of this old American family feud is between the McCoys and the Hatfields? I take some weird American history. Look into it. McCoys and Hatfield. They ran a family feud through generations. Hey, you know what else? You ever read Romeo and Juliet? Romeo and Juliet is talking about family feud. Those two families out there killing each other. I like the modern adaptations of it. Revenge is much quicker. Revenge is much quicker. But they tell us that because loving your enemy doesn't mean that you need to just silently suffer. You need to just, maybe it's my fault. Let me just pray and it will go away. But it's not like that. We look at an example in John 18. When Jesus was brought in front of the Sanhedrins and stuff like that, after Jesus pleaded his case, one guy go in there and they slap Jesus right across the face. And Jesus said that if I've done something wrong, testify me. Even Jesus complained. When Paul was being beaten and stuff like that, first thing he claimed, I'm a Roman citizen. You can't do this to me. One of the things with us is we have very little faith in the justice system. and less faith, less participation into the justice system, weaker it gets. I always believe that Christians need to focus on how the justice system works and how to utilize it. Last year, a friend of mine, his daughter was in school, second year college, private school, really good. She was doing good. And out from this situation, she was sexually assaulted. And then seeing the daughter and the father literally come apart. At the beginning, the girl couldn't even really describe what's going on. And then to the point that you almost just say that, she said to her dad, it's like, can we just forgive him and let it go away? And out from the wisdom of the mom, is like, we can forgive him, but first we have to bring these things into justice because this person didn't even think that they'd done something wrong. And it's a long, arduous process because we have to force and coach and counsel and pray for this girl so she would go see and face her assailant. At the beginning, she couldn't even tell the story right. And you can just, her father saying that it was so angry to see the smirk on this kid's face. If we're looking at Stogate love, parental love, more than throwing a batch of philia, brotherly love, you can see that I'm clenching these things right now because I feel like I want to kill that kid. At least hurt him. At least hurt him. I can feel the pain. But if it's actually agape love, it was some of the mom. I respect her so much. Was going through this process is in prayer and to building up this girl until a year of time from a shattered person to something emerged of something much braver. All I can say is describe it as like you seeing her own, her inner Wonder Woman came out. In a year of time, winning, closing to time, the arraignments and stuff like that, you see the girl just come together. She plead her case. She speak with wisdom and then everything was concise. When she began to speak with truth, when she's actually speak with courage, as I believe is the Holy Spirit is with her, is giving her that courage, it's not even her. You see something different. You see her assailant becoming fearful. He can't make eye contact with her. This is not a girl in shock anymore. This girl describe what he have done. And he is beginning to terrify. Justice. God, justice. I remember the very first time I preached over here a long time ago with something off of Micah. Do justice. Love mercy. Walk humbly with God. This thing doesn't change. His mercy and justice. Also in Romans 12, it was talking about, it's like, you have to not revenge. It's the weirdest thing. It's like, leave room for God's wrath. For vengeance is mine. I'll be honest with you, God does killing much better than you could ever do. You kill, you sin. You harbor killing thoughts in your heart, you sin. But when God kill, it's clean. Look at the Canaanite now. Where are they? Where are the Canaanite now? When he does his job, he does it deep. Also in things as the agape love is teach you that on Romans 12. Remember last year, Uncle Peter asked you to read Romans 12? Self-sacrifice. You're sacrificing your revenge, God, because of my love to you, because of what you have done. I'm sacrificing this. It doesn't mean I'm not pursuing justice, but I'm letting you do justice. I'm trusting you on it. That's just justice. Also, another thing we have to look at that is that there's an upside-down kingdom value to this. And what is this upside-down kingdom value to this? If you're reading it, it's like, love your enemy. Do good to those who hate you. That doesn't make sense. That's the title of this sermon. It's like, but Lord, I don't want to love my enemy. It's hard. But those who curse you, pray for them who mistreat you. If someone strikes you in one cheek, turn the other one. Why would we do stuff like that? Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. I'm having hard enough time just to pray for myself sometimes, to pray for those who's mistreating me. But here it is. It is what Jesus said it is. He's expecting you to do this. And this is how I explain to myself why. Because when you're in a conflict, when you're in persecution, you bring God into it. It is the fact that you bring God into it. I'm a sore loser. Sometimes when people say something to me, I take it. I get injured. I got all hurt. Oh, he's persecuting me. But when you're praying for that person, so you're praying for that process, you leave room. You leave room. You leave room to contemplate, A, did you leave yourself out there to become vulnerable? Are you 100% hands clean? Or did you participate in it? Are you inviting this opportunity to be on you? You think about it. Are you really being persecuted? If you are, you bring God into these equations that how you're allowing Him to wash over you. Because forgiveness is not an easy thing. But you open up room for Him to do God's stuff. A lot of time, God is using your injuring chance. It might not seem fair to you, but He's using your injury to heal another person. And sometimes people like I will go and do this little rant, getting all mad at people. But sometimes halfway through, I realize that I'm accusing the wrong persons. Out of shame, you turn up the heat. You run your mouth even harder. But if a person get mad, right now, right here, we're getting into a conflict. On in the worst things, we're getting into a fight. But God say, calm down. Pray and bless. Bring me into it. Think clearly. Or even think about a chance that have you leave yourself, have you inviting these things comes into it? You have to think God lens, upside down value. In the physical sense, that even would do you good, because sometimes medical studies say that if you're holding into your anger, your body turns acidic. That's very inviting for cancer. 1 Corinthians 13 is always talking about this love things. It's always like a favorite passage for wedding. But I believe it's a self-check. Often among all of them, is one is called hold no records of wrong. He holds a record of wrong. You learn a lesson, but if you hold a record of wrong, turn you into a hater. Turn you into a hater. Matthew 18, it's talk about these things, is always stuck to me. It's the ungrateful servant. It's the servant that who owes a lot, and then he ran out there. Someone who owes him little, he accused him, he took him to jail. And that, if you get anything, you need to hang on to this. If you want to go out there and get even, you want to go out there and get right, get revenge. You got to think about these things. Because the last things it says in this sentence is, you got to be like your Father, the Son of the Most High, because He's kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be mercy, just as your Father is merciful. We are the sinner. We are the persecuted. We are the people who receive grace. We are enemy of God. Grace came, found us, not because we're worthy. It's a thing that we always, in each situation, especially when you are being persecuted, it almost want to punch you back into the thing. It's like, can you think about grace? Can you think about what does it mean? You see, this is the things always to us. It's when we get saved, it's almost like God just make us a better person. I can't see that much sins in my heart. I never kill anyone. But you did transgress against God. You have none of Him before you know Him. It was Jesus, the gospel, come and find you. Regardless of how you see your transgression, is your transgression is transgressions. It's a death sentence. But He hung His Son on the cross. It's this thing that I know that sometimes I keep coming back to you, the word Shemot. You know how what the when the Jewish people used to pray? They used to pray these things is in Deuteronomy. It's like love God with all your soul, all your mind. Sorry, just give me a second. I think it's Deuteronomy.
6:4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is your God, the glorious one. Love your God, with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments I give you today are to be on your heart. Impel them on your children. Talk about them when you're sitting and when you're walking along, when you're lying down, when you're getting up. It's to tell you that don't ever forget what happened in Egypt. Don't ever happen what happened when you were saved. Always recounting that you've been saved. It is grace. I know I'm stressing the point, but you have to get it. You have to always reflect on. People always say that I believe in Jesus. I mean, one point you believe a guy in Galilee built a pretty fantastic table. That doesn't mean that you're understanding. It's recounting grace. Knowing what that means. It's a progression. It's an increment. You're walking closer. You're trying to figure out what that means. But write it on your heart. Sitting, standing, walking, laying down, you figure this out. This is what a relationship with him is mean. But when you can actually wait these things out, you realize people's transgressions on you far less than what you have transcribed on God. I'll give you this. And sometimes I catch myself. Recently, I'm starting a prayer journal, and I'm ashamed of it. It's gimme, 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 sorry, sorry, sorry. It's pathetic. I sometimes yell at you guys. It's like how your relationship with God transcribes into your prayer. I do the same thing. I treat him as a vending machine. I'm guilty and ask for forgiveness. And all among all my prayer, one of the things that recently I'm dabbled onto and set me free is pray for forgiveness. Not just my forgiveness, is that I forgive. I wipe everyone's debts clean. I people did hurt me. That's why I'm sore. I'll tell you that. I have went to trade school and people, when I was in the time, I saved up some money going to trade school and people stole my money. I've been paying a construction job that my boss delayed my paycheck and one of my coworkers stole money from me. I have worked in a job that my boss lied to me. They tell me to hang in there and then while everyone's transferring out, little as I know, this is the department's going to get closed down. I got suckered. I have every right reason to hate. And hating is much more comfortable. So I don't want to forgive my enemy. But when you're contemplating, when I am contemplating on where I came from, suddenly all these things seem minuscule. Minuscule. Not worth talking about. Let's look upon the cross. A couple of things I want to add on to it is, Christians, it's not that we sit there and passively take the abuse. Forgiveness, justice, these things are active. You have to walk alongside. Micah said that you can do justice and love mercies because you walk humbly with God. You have to walk humbly with God. This thing is hard. Way hard. This is what Martin Luther King Jr. said. Do anyone not know who Martin Luther King Jr. is? This man, this preacher. People always say that he's a philanthropist, he's a civil rights leader, but no one ever talk about he's a pastor. He's a pastor from the core of who he is. And one of his most sermon touching it, it's just that he wrote it. It was told that one time he wrote it on scrap papers in a jail cell. It's forgiving your enemy. And these are his words. And know then how he's very interesting way of using grammar. Now let me hasten to say that Jesus was very serious when he gave this command. He wasn't playing. He realized it's hard to love your enemy. He realized that this is difficult to love those persons who seek to defeat you. Those persons who say evil things about you. He realized that it was plainly hard, pressingly hard. But he wasn't playing. These are Dr. King's words. I'm not saying that this is easy. This thing is probably the hardest thing Jesus ever asked us to do. But when he did it, we call ourselves Christians. It is something that we need to reflect on. Also, another thing I want to bring it out. It's to be merciful as your Father. And this is something I think you already get. But let me jump to one last thing. Maybe you think that in my life, there's no one hate me.
I'm a nice person. No one ever hate me. Now, I don't want to sound too judgmental, but we have to reflect onto your life. When your Christian values are so invisible, when your Christian ethics is so invisible, you are so ready to compromise. You have no enemy. Jesus said that, Pastor Dan, right? He said that I'm here to bring frictions between people. I believe it's in Matthew 10. I'm here to cause strife. I'm here to get you trouble. It's because how you see into my value will make you weirder than everyone else. The one that always led me into hot water is I always believe that there's sex. There's two biological sex. I get people fired up. People say, are you just hating on the homosexuals? Like, no, I'm just hating on sex before marriage. I'm hating on anything outside of the covenantal marriage. That's got me hate. I have a unique view. Shouldn't you love your enemy? Love the terrorist? I said, that is not persecution because of a Christian faith. It is a Christian nation. I have my own view of it. I catch heat. I catch heat every family gathering at my wife's side of the family. It's all right. But nothing is even remotely close. They just run their mouth at me, that's all. But reflect onto your own Christian's life. If wherever you go, the schools you go to, the friends that you are. And some people say that they're Christian just because they have a Bible verse tattoo on their neck or on the wrist. Christian values is coming from here. It flows out from here. When it flows it out, guarantee you, you'll be persecuted. But be joyful. That he who was persecuted will know you by the scar. Know you by the cross that you bear. That's what he's talking about. And then lastly, got to remember, this is if there's anything to take anything that you're awake at this point. And then because he's kind to the ungrateful and wicked, be merciful. Just as your father is merciful, he make you into his son. So be like your father. Be merciful. This is the word of the Lord. Do you have a response song, Peter?